You are listening to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, episode 293, deleting apps on the Apple Watch and Windows. Season 7, episode 293 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is May the 7th, 2017. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and guarding the galaxy is my brother, James Furlough.
Yeah, for once I actually saw the movie the weekend it came out.
That's crazy. You probably saw it before me.
Yeah, I saw it Friday at the noon showing, actually.
You saw it a whole 24 hours before me. That's
nice.
Crazy.
I know. That's what I get for not working all week. I actually got time to do these kind of things.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm super happy that I'm working my way through the Cheers TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was referenced just a little bit in the movie, and I got to fully appreciate the reference.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Really?
Yeah. No. That was a quote.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. No.
Sam and Anne, Cheers. It was big on Earth in the '80s.
Yeah. It was pretty good. No, it was a good movie. I liked it a lot, actually. I thought things like I was afraid that I would get tired of Baby Groot, based off the trailers and stuff. I was gonna be like, this is gonna be a dumb character, but no, they did a pretty good job. It just enough fun and just enough where it was like, nah, that wasn't too much. That was okay. I enjoyed it.
I made the mistake of watching the movie with, I guess how you would describe yourself last year, super overly critical types of people, where the true joy of the film is before it plays.
Yes, is
imagining the trailer or what it could be based on the trailer, and so I think I have yet to go to a movie where this person's not like, meh. Which you think I would learn. Because you're like, dude, way to suck the fun out of it. He's like, I just wasn't... It was like they were just trying too hard. I don't know. It just... But here's the interesting thing. Like, if you give him time to let it marinate and let him watch it again, then he's like, oh yeah, I thought it was good. Like, for example, he's like, the first one, he's like, oh, that was fantastic. I love the first one. Best one ever. And then this one, he's like, eh, they just tried too hard. I'm like... Give it time.
I know that feeling. It's funny. It reminds me of it's one of the reasons why I went through my whole it's okay to spoil movies last year, and I came out the other side of that thinking that I don't prefer spoiled movies because I still like the surprise, but Sony right now has got me a bit upset because their trailer is a beat for beat. This happens, then this happens, then this happens of Spider-Man.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's just nothing to the imagination.
That is the worst trailer. Or is at least Wonder Woman. So DC released today the final Wonder Woman.
I saw that. I was like, wait, is that a new one? Or
yeah, it's brand new. And I was like, I was kind of tentative about watching it, but I actually decided to watch it because my girlfriend, who happens to share the same name as the main character of the movie.
First name is Wonder. That's amazing.
Exactly. she's quite excited about the movie, and I was like, I'll watch this trailer.
Dude, my wife's excited about it too. That's her favorite superhero.
I don't blame him. But I was like, I'll watch this trailer. That way, I can warn Diana. Like, you need to not watch the trailer if you're gonna. So I was gonna take one for the team. Is why I watched it. And I think it's entirely possible that DC might be learning. There was very little that was in that trailer that wasn't in previous trailers. A couple of action beats, but very little plot. Like, I'm convinced at this point we still don't know who the main bad guy is. We don't really know. We know.
I guess I'm not convinced. I have a hunch, which that's good enough.
Right. Well, that's the point. Is that it's like, is this? The risk of going too far. I actually think it is my suspicion that this trailer goes way out of its way to misdirect you to think on into who you suspect the main villain is, as opposed to Batman.
Which, by the way, I think it's the one guy who's like, "Who are you?" I think that's my current vote.
Interesting. Well, you haven't seen the latest trailer.
No, I haven't.
But unlike Superman versus Batman, where they're like, it's going to be Doomsday at the very end of the movie. That's how they're going to come together. They're going to get over their differences. And that's it. Just
yay. The thanks suspense.
For explaining There's the none. Movie to us, guys. That's really great. Well, that's job
like,
there.
Who, awesome. It's, who does those movies again? Like, yeah, he does not understand that the art of there's a box that we shall never open and we shall just wonder what is inside the box.
Leaving the mystery. Well, that's one of the things that
isn't that, what's his face does that the Star Wars guy. And he did a couple Star Trek.
JJ Abrams.
That's his whole thing, right?
Yeah, the mystery box.
And I think it works. And, but whoever is it, Zack Snyder, is that the guy?
Yeah.
That's the guy who did those, the last two Superman movies, he's like, no. There is no box. We're just going to lay it all out for you.
In Snyder's defense, and I'm not one who would normally come to Snyder's defense, I suspect those trailers were made by committee by men in suits who think that they understand,
whatever, he doesn't. Fine. He doesn't have the ability to stand up and say no. But look, I'm not convinced of that, because at the end of Batman v Superman, Superman's dead.
That's a good point.
He again, he can't leave the box alone. He has to open it up for look, he's not actually dead.
And
surprise. Spoiler, by the way.
And the thing is, and the worst part about that one is that we've seen movies where they totally get away with that. And I mean, the classic example is Lord of the Rings. Like, the books have been around for half a century. We know Gandalf isn't dead. But
still don't do it.
I can say you don't show that revealed in the last 30 seconds of the trailer or of the movie. Be like, oh, just, Gandalf's not dead. Like, let it have some weight, man. Let us walk out of the theater thinking, okay, how does this get, how do we've gone over the cliff. Like we're now plummeting towards the ground. How do we pull out of this? I don't know. It just sometimes it's just the bad.
Which, by the way, that's something that I truly appreciate about. So I've got, like I said, I'm working through Cheers right now. I'm on season 5. I don't even know how many seasons there are. I'm trying to make it a point not to look ahead, just enjoy the ride that I'm on with them.
All right,
emotional roller coaster. It's crazy episodes, but I think one of the really interesting things that they do with it. So they're only they're 20-minute shows to begin with, right? So in the age of Netflix original content where it's a full hour, and a lot happens. It's like, man, 20 minutes. No, you can't just do everything. And one of the things that I fully appreciate is they will, they'll do something. They'll hit it hard. Not resolve it, and then just ignore it for 3-4 episodes. Just didn't happen. Don't even worry about it. It's just really weird. It's definitely not modern storytelling.
Right.
There are times when they'll be doing something.
Give me an example.
yeah. So here's an example. So there's one where they're taking Dr. Fraser Crane, who he's a psychologist. Kind of never, and they take him hunting, okay, fishing, fishing.
Well, it is literally the same character from the
TV show,
show Frasier.
So. Yeah, but so he's not an outdoorsman at all,
right?
And and through life, they're like, yeah, you should come with us. Well, the guys come back without Frasier, and they're like, well, what happened to Frasier? And oh, dude, get this, here's what we did. We totally we told him that there's a way to catch this animal using this bag and this sound. And we told him to just stand out there and to do his thing. And then we left and we ditched him. And like, it's so funny. Right. And so, and they're just like, you know, and one of the girls at the bar, she's just like, that's horrible. What a mean trick. You know, you guys are so mean. He trusted you. And they're like, no, it's going to be hilarious. And so he comes back just totally disheveled and all dirty. Later, yeah. He's like, guys, I want to apologize for ditching you. Okay. Like, cause I didn't stand by my post. I went off and I was chasing after him cause I thought I heard something and I lost you guys. And it's like, it's my fault. My bad. You know, he's like, but that was awesome. It was amazing. And they're just like cracking up and like, oh, okay. Yeah. Awesome, man.
That's funny.
And so, but it's one of those things where like, he's like, guys, we should go out there again. Like, that was awesome. Let's go out again and do it. And they're just like, yeah, okay. Game on. Well, so the girl, she pulls him off to the side and is like, dude, there's no such thing as that. Just so you know, like, they're just messing with you. And he goes, yeah, I know. He goes, but I'm going to get them back. Like, we're headed out there and I'm going to get them back and it's going to be awesome. So, yeah. So don't worry about it. So then they go back and he's like, all right, guys, you ready? Let's go get him. Like, yeah. Roll the credits.
All right.
That's the story. You know, but like in today's storytelling, I'm like, they did the setup. Like, right. You know, they did the funny
thing.
Well,
that's...
It was another thing. And now he's setting it up. And it's just like in normal modern storytelling, it would just keep ratcheting up.
Oh, yeah. Slapsgiving is the classic example. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, Slapsgiving was a Thanksgiving Day prank in like season one of How I Met Your Mother, where Marshall earned 5 slaps at any time in the future against like undefended, unresponded to, and it took him like 5 seasons, and it wasn't one a season. That was the funniest part. It wasn't like every Thanksgiving. It was what made it so tense. He got him twice one year, just to really throw him off.
Yeah, like, and that's one of those things where you don't let it go. Or if it comes up, that's somehow an integral part in the storyline, which is funny. There's something that happened in season one that it just kind of did it. And I remember, and I looked at it and I went, that's coming back. Like, that's coming back in the season finale. Like, it was that momentous of a thing.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I don't, you know, it might've just happened. But it's just interesting looking at how storytelling has evolved over time. Cause like again, they just rolled the credits. It was done. Yeah. That was the story. They told it. And I can imagine how it finishes. And it's just fun to see like how these things evolve. Anyway, it makes Guardians of the Galaxy ever just so slightly better.
Right. So, you know. Oh, no, I find that stuff super interesting. The idea of these, like, these super epic things that continue, especially with TV shows where they continue week to week, and you get to see them evolve over time and all the different characters interacting. And you know what it reminds me of, James?
What?
It reminds me of this week, the things that we're going to be talking about. Particularly technology and the continuing corporate opera. It's a bit like a TV show that evolves week to week. All right, when we talk about the soap opera or the corporate opera, I mean, we're referring to this idea of a soap opera of corporations, their dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of our weekly show, James, short closure, he wants to throw our way.
I founded and work for HPI, but I do not represent HPI or any of their opinions. I also own part of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club.
Nice.
And I voted for Lending Club's board of director meeting proxy vote stuff this last week. It was super boring.
Yeah. Just,
who do we want to reelect to the board? Lame.
Hey, everybody. But last week I gave you a homework assignment of seeing if your bank had signed you up for any false accounts. Did you look into that?
Nope.
You should. All right. We'll see you next week. you want to pause
that
week?
Down, though.
I know, man. Wells Fargo. There's crazy guys. If you want to follow us throughout the week, you can do that very easily. We are all up on the internet doing all sorts of internet-y sorts of things, including but not limited to Twitter. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlow. Instagram, my handle is NextWiggin4. Feel free to follow me and stuff.
I am James Furlow everywhere. I also have to disclose, by the way, my smart home is slightly less smart at the moment.
What'd you do?
My what's the thing called? My thermostat has decided to die on me.
That's super frustrating.
Not quite a year in. And super fun. I'm going through a whole bunch of finger pointing right now where I contacted his name is on the device, the original installer, and he came and checked it out and went, everything's working fine. It's your thermostat. I went and I talked to the thermostat people, and they were like, thermostat's fine. It's your equipment. I'm like, well, that can't be. But I resolved it today because I went and bought a new thermostat and everything. So I'm pretty certain it was the hardware. So one of the downsides of a smart gadget, which was interesting, the guy was like, he goes, huh, so there's no screen on this? I'm like, well, normally there is, but it's having an issue right now. It's not turning on. He's like, that's going to make it hard to diagnose, won't it? I'm like, well.
Yeah, thanks.
I suppose. Yes. The joys of a touchscreen, I guess. smart home fun.
That's good times. So where can people watch you complain about their smart homes?
Oh, still James Furlow everywhere.
I'm on the
Twitter, man. I've been finding and liking some good stuff lately.
Nice. Also, if you want to get more information about the show, everything we talk about this week, you can go to furlowbiz.com. All the clicks, links, videos, everything that we talk about will be there. Go and check it out. Also, you can sign up for our weekly newsletter where all of this amazing content will be delivered to your email inbox for you to peruse on a Monday morning when you're goofing off. You're not really working yet. Let's be honest. None of us are. This will give you something good to look at.
So, yeah.
You're welcome. It's our gift to you. It's free.
So, it was we'll be honest. It was a little bit of a slow week. But don't worry. we found things that are interesting.
Microsoft can't be happy that we're describing the week where they announce a whole bunch of new hardware and software. It's a week.
I think it was one new hardware, one new software. No,
that's a good point.
But anyways, we will talk about that. But before we get to that, we'll talk about some tech startups, which will be kind of fun. We can't help ourselves. We're going to talk a little bit about Apple. And then we're going to talk about CRISPR, huh? Okay, that'll be interesting. And then we'll finish it up with some other light news for the week. Like, for example, Uber's Travis Kalanick crying.
You figured out how to say his name.
So that's what we're going to do. So first, let's talk about some pitches. So because it was a little bit slow over a week, TechCrunch took it upon themselves to create a slideshow post. And so they're turning into a classic website, which is fine. But anyways, they imagined 5 retro technology startup pitches. Okay? So kind of fun.
Okay.
So here's one of them. Who doesn't hate traffic? Americans cumulatively spend 8 billion hours stuck in traffic last year. Ride sharing services like Uber and Lyft had made commuting more cost effective than ever before, but riders still suffer from the growing volume of traffic on the roads in their cities. Enter Zuber. Zuber is a Zeppelin sharing service that takes the pain out of your commute.
That actually sounds pretty cool. I would get into that.
They've created a fixed route optimization solution for their Zeppelin fleets hovering 1,500 feet off the ground. They leverage advanced computer vision technology to study traffic patterns to generate hourly optimized routes for their Zuber pilots. They market directly to municipalities and corporations, and they let each of them pitch in to buy, quote, required stops that become mandatory stops for all riders. they have their technical team. It's a former Hyperloop One engineer who developed a proprietary last-mile pod solution for getting riders in and out of the crafts. You'll appreciate this. Some of our competitors are exploring tunnels as a solution to long commutes, but we believe our approach is less capital intensive and can hit scale more rapidly.
Not that. I get it. I
love it. How about this one? Though we wouldn't admit it, deep down we all have a little Veruca salt. That would be a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I was going to say, it sounds really pretty sure she's the bad egg, yeah?
She is. When we want things, we want them now. And that's perfectly okay. This is why the same-day delivery market is expected to grow to an astonishing $1 billion by 2019. But the problem with same-day delivery is that it's prohibitively expensive. Today, we make products come to people. But what if we made people go to products? Mm. This is the question that we're answering with, I think I can say this, numerous, with a P, by the way.
Like pneumatic.
Yes, exactly. Numerous is a restaurant concept that puts the diner in the driver's seat. Customers can order anything, yes, anything, and have it delivered via pneumatic tube to their table. I love it. They've co-located with Amazon Fulfillment Centers to allow instant delivery directly to the dinner table at low cost or at lower cost than traditional logistic providers.
Pneumatics. Yeah, you know, pneumatics are an interesting thing. The history of pneumatics and why they do and don't work. And because remember, like, how banks all used to have pneumatic tubes everywhere? So you could, like, send dollars every, like, bundles of cash. Yeah. And Costco's.
Yeah, that's right. They do it there. You'll appreciate this one, I'm pretty sure. Power is the single biggest limitation of today's technology.
All right, I agree.
Electric cars, mobile devices, laptops, they've all become more capable in recent years, and yet none of them can make it through even a week of use without being tethered to a power outlet. Imagine a world where batteries could be kept charged in real time. Our cars could drive forever. Our mobile devices and laptops could be made to do more things for longer. Nico is that future.
I get it.
Today's wireless charging solutions are nothing more than modified cables that require contact to charge. Instead, our team is using highly directional Wi-Fi to wirelessly charge batteries over long distances. Right now, we are limited to a few feet, but we believe this is something we will ultimately be able to make ubiquitous. Oh, man.
This is a Tesla startup, obviously.
Uh-huh.
That's for the name. Uh-huh. The Nicolette.
And then how about this one? In the 1890s, we collectively decided to make alternating current our electric power transmission system of choice. Since then, both the ways we produce and consume power has changed dramatically. Yet we continue to use a 130-year-old technology to drive our 21st century economy. Take data centers, for example, that require huge amounts of DC power. Does it make sense to waste millions of dollars converting existing AC power into DC?
Yes.
Of course it doesn't.
Okay.
Direct.io is imagining a future where our world can take advantage of the benefits offered by direct current.
I don't know why this one annoys me more than the rest of them. Because I think it's because it – I think what it is it sounds so legit. Like, the other ones, like, of course you wouldn't use pneumatic teams to use it. Of course you wouldn't use Zeppelins. Of course you'd go with wireless power if it were possible. Like, those are either obviously not possible or obviously there's limitations, or they're just, like, the ridiculousness of them don't, like, just stick out like a sore thumb. Because I feel like this one annoys me the most because it's a little bit complicated to explain why it's such a bad idea, which would make it interesting. Like, it make it hard to explain to people, like, no, trust me. I realize it's inefficient to make, like, direct, like, alternate to convert AC to DC at the location, but it's actually a good idea. Anyway.
They do say that they won't charge businesses for the installation. They'll only take a 10% of the cost savings, which
is
classic for how solar is doing it. And then,
okay, just so we all know, this is the difference. DC current requires DC over long distances. There's a voltage drop over there's a lot of okay like analogies to explain it, but basically DC current requires much, much thicker copper cabling than AC current to go long distances. And so the copper becomes cost prohibitive very, very, very quickly, which is why AC one, it can just deliver a lot more power, a lot further. So DC is better if you have DC applications, but you can't power an entire city with it. You could do like small neighborhoods. If you have solar power, it is DC inherently, and it gets pumped into your DC batteries and then converted back to AC, so your home can convert it into DC to charge your phone. It is a little bit ridiculous, but it makes it all compatible. So,
very true. And then finally, the world is at an inflection point. Climate scientists predict that major U.S. cities, including Miami and New York City, will face an increasing threat of flooding over the next century. We could sit back and wait for our leaders to do something, but we need to take action now so that we are prepared, regardless of the actions of others. The mission of Free Roam is to create a backup plan for transportation as water levels continue to rise. Today, that means developing inexpensive and reliable amphibious crafts that can be used by emergency rescue teams. Tomorrow, it may mean mass market vehicles that can move us from place to place regardless of the weather. The Roamer, our first prototype vehicle, is set to go into limited production next month, and we've already lined up early customers from coastal municipalities across the country. We've actually had so much demand that we've had to artificially cap supply. And then they talk about some of their capital that they're raising. But yeah, an amphibious vehicle.
I like it.
Super funny.
I want an amphibious vehicle.
I thought that was super creative, and that's definitely like how it feels for a lot of the the pitches that that you hear and receive, and I think they're awesome personally.
What? Oh yeah, that is awesome. The link to from the direct.io company, that example, I actually have a link to a GigaOm article about the next big thing for data centers, DC power. Yeah, it's an interesting problem. Tesla. There's a web comic, for lack of a better word, that I watch called Zen Pencils. And his comic this week was about Tesla and the moment where he figured out, it's a quote where of Tesla in the moment that like it's clicked how to make motors work. And yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. Tesla was ahead of his time. I was just a smart dude. But yeah, so that's cool. I have a question, James. If a tree falls in the forest and nobody is around, does it make a sound?
Yes.
And in a corollary, if Amazon, Target, Google, and eBay turn off their Apple Watch apps, but nobody notices, were they even on to begin with?
That's more complicated.
Yeah, the obvious answer is yes, they were on. Engineers were being paid to support the apps, which is why they turned them off. But the crazy part is that like these apps have all been like pulled from the app store for like a couple of weeks and nobody noticed until earlier this week. Like
nice.
Nobody. And it's kind of an interesting, I don't know. It's an interesting conundrum because at the same time we're getting Apple had their earnings call and they made more money than ever, and their Apple Watch just on like crazy. They're out on everybody, but it seems that as the use case for the Apple Watch is sort of narrowing in on a handful of applications, specifically notifications and health tracking. Surprising nobody, some of your more pointless apps that were big, you know. They were meant to be like these. Jeez, my brain, man. I've been sick for like a week, and so struggling a little bit. But these companies were brought on by Apple to like build apps for the Apple Watch because they wanted it.
Yeah.
They ended up the company so that they could say, look at all these cool apps. And nobody uses them. Which is kind of obvious. Like, who wants to shop for their Amazon stuff on their Apple Watch? Like, that's not what that's designed for. Likewise, eBay, and especially because a lot of these things, it's like you'd get notifications to your phone from your phone. Like, if you set up eBay and you want notifications for when, like, something is coming towards the end, you'd get a notification on your watch. You'd be like, oh, yeah, that item. And maybe that notification will come up with this current price, which will then lead you to pull your phone out of your pocket and interact on it, on the phone, and do whatever you want to do in the main app. And I think that all of these companies have just realized that that's really the advantage of the Apple Watch, is it's once again, is that notification center. And if you can really build up the notifications, that's huge. The other issue with a lot of these...
I agree with you on Amazon, Target, and eBay for shopping apps in general.
Yes.
But there's one of those that's a little concerning.
Google?
Yeah.
Well, so this, it also came out later this week that they... So two thoughts on that. Number one, that was an app that was built using like the first generation of the Apple Watch stuff. So it's not a native app. It actually pulls all of its assets from the phone. So it is quite slow. It doesn't really load very quickly. And that's actually a characteristic shared by all of these apps, is they never really got updated to be native to the Apple Watch. And Google has actually come back and said, yeah, we're working on it. they're like, basically, nobody was using the app. It wasn't really working. We're kind of embarrassed by it, so we turned it off. We have another app that's coming down the pike. We haven't finished it yet. So chill out, everybody. The expectation is that it'll come back. But once again, the really interesting part about this is that it's been gone for quite a few weeks and nobody noticed until this week. Somebody finally was like, hey, that's weird. Where did these apps go? I'm sort of looking into it.
I actively remove apps from my watch.
I know.
Mostly so when I'm looking at all the dots that are on there, I just have less that are confusing to me. I still have way more than I probably should, but
I have so many. It's ridiculous. It drives me nuts. Because it's like, why do I need? I don't need Mint on my Apple Watch.
Yeah, I deleted it.
Yeah, I don't need Zagat. I don't need... Well, and the worst part is, like, they rearrange all of your... the apps all the time. So it's like you never can come back and find them. It drives me crazy. The app page on the Apple Watch is, I think, to me, it's, like, the most disappointing part about the entire thing experience still. It's like, there's got to be a better way of doing this. Individual apps I really like. The watch faces with the complications are good. They've worked out the whole, like, the app tray thing works well for me, but that big app page is just terrible. Real disappointment. But how are you?
I'm looking at it, and I would say about half of them are installed and half of them are not. I don't know why Solitaire is installed. That's dumb. And done.
See, some of these, I look at these, like, I see the icon and I don't even know what these apps are. I have to click on it to open it up. That's not good.
As a general rule, that's not good. I have Pokemon Go installed, but I don't really play that anymore.
Yeah. Sucking down your battery.
Fandango. I think that's actually doing anything.
I don't know. You know what? That's another one where it's like, whenever I buy from Fandango, I always buy through the app and then I add it to my wallet. So I use my watch to actually scan the tickets frequently, but that's because it's in my wallet.
Then uninstalling. Done.
Nice.
That was an easy decision. But I'm the kind of person where my mentality is I will uninstall and get rid of you. And then if it's a pain that you're no longer there, then I will add you back later.
That's the right way to do it. Yeah, I find it fascinating as people are sort of narrowing in on the actual use case of these devices. It makes me feel a little bit vindicated because I've been saying what I want is a LTE or just an internet connected version of it, a cellular connected version of the Apple Watch. Because what I want is to be able to walk away from my computers and my phone and everything and still get notifications just to let me know, hey, you need to go to a computer and do something. I think that's the future of mobile computing, or that's a big aspect of the future of mobile computing. I doubt that it might be a fad for a while to have some sort of a heads up display strapped to your face all the time, but I think that will be, if we ever go through a period where we do that, which I'm kind of doubtful, I think it'll just be a period. I don't think it'll be forever. Oh, it just feels weird. Everybody's strapping glasses to their face. I guess you might have said the same thing though if you were like, you know, back before the advent of wristwatches. If somebody had suggested one day everybody will wear wristwatches, in somebody like me, a Luddite would just be like, "Whoa, why would you do that? Like, who would need to know the time? How? Why would everybody need to know the time all the time? Like, that doesn't even make sense. It seems like a really dumb use case. Why would you strap this mechanical device to your body so you can constantly be informed of this information that doesn't really seem that necessary? You know what? I'm talking myself into it.
It makes sense to me.
Heads up display all the time. Wristwatch. Never going to take off. It's a dead end technology.
That's the attitude. So you think it's not necessarily the Apple Watch is a failure. It's more of this, it's made for a certain subset of things and we're crystallizing what those are.
Right. Yeah. You know, there's a bunch of experiments that people are running. Maybe people will want to shop on their watch. And now that they're actually, people are using Apple Watch, they're realizing, no, they don't.
It's interesting. I mean, cause I found like, how do I describe it? Like, did we see that same thing with from the PC to the phone or even to the laptop? I mean, they changed dramatically, I guess, but they all figured out ways to operate. You know what I'm trying to say?
Like, yeah.
I'm trying to think of a program, like email, I guess, would be an example where that translated pretty well. Your calendar did. I'm trying. A lot of the stuff were websites that I visited at the time. And
well, I think that's one of the interesting parts of it.
Apps.
I think that's part of it, though, is that like desktop websites didn't work on smartphones. They really didn't work on the Palm and the BlackBerry, and they didn't really work very well on Flash. Didn't work on the iPhone. There was a long period where a lot of these, Apple went out of their way. Steve Jobs went out of their way to show that like the iPad wasn't a productivity tool. It was a consumption device because there were certain tasks that you couldn't do on the device and you shouldn't try. You know, obviously the irony of that being, well, not irony, but the end result of that being now you've got the iPad Pro and it's supposed to be a full featured productivity tool for certain classes of productivity, creative arts and stuff like that. But if your productivity is involved in programming, you still can't compile and execute applications on an iPad. Mm-hmm. And so there are types of computation that you can't do on other mobile devices.
You don't do your CAD programming stuff.
Right. Right. Well,
I guess it just seems like, you know what I'm trying to get at.
Right.
Right? Where it's like, there are certain things that, and it goes the other way too, where there are certain things that I would much rather prefer to do on my phone. And if I ever have to do it on my PC, I'm just like, oh, man.
Yeah. Like what?
Yeah. Gosh, let me look at my phone real quick here. Like my to-do list, right? I'm 90% of the time, it's just better to have that on my phone. I don't know. I feel like listening to music is something that's better on my phone than it is on my computer.
I think it goes back and forth. It's gone back and forth over the years, whether I like navigating in apps more on my phone or my computer.
I think Twitter is better on my phone than on the computer, honestly.
That's true.
There's a bunch of games that they're just more fun on my phone than what I would imagine the equivalent would be on the computer, because it's just kind of made from the grounds up. I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, and then does that work on a watch too, where you have certain things where it's like, man, I'd much rather do this on my watch, like tell the time, versus on my phone or on the computer. And then, and clearly we're now looking at, there's a bunch of things that, shopping being one of them. I actually think, and that's one where I would go shopping on a large screen, full web browser, like say Amazon, I'm like, that's my preference.
Right.
And then, cause when you go into the phone or a tablet, then they do the whole, like, if you tap on something, it goes to a new screen and it gives you the full thing and you kind of lose the continuity of it all. And, it's okay. I'm okay. But, but it's just not as good. So like, that's an example where if I'm on Amazon, I would much rather go to amazon.com on my desktop computer. And then I'd rather take it down to my tablet than my phone. And I never tried it, and I never will, apparently.
Yeah.
Watch. Yeah. Cause that just seems like, I'm like, I don't even, unless I knew exactly what I wanted, but it doesn't have Alexa built in. And maybe if the Amazon app, which it now on my phone does, if it somehow was also accessible in a similar manner on my watch, okay, sure, maybe I would order some stuff. Cause I've been looking into the Amazon dash buttons, and they don't have the products I want or in the quantities that I want.
Yeah.
But there's a few things where I'm like, dude, dash button, that'd be pretty convenient.
Put it out of your daughter's reach.
Oh, I know. Right. But I just, maybe that would be interesting actually, if Amazon created dash apps for your watch. That'd be actually semi fascinating. You turn it on and tap it and okay, done. Wow. That's a brilliant idea. They should take me up on that. I'm trying to go back in the other direction. Fitness stuff. I much prefer that on my watch over my phone. Though after I'm done with the workout, I'd much rather pull out my phone and look at all my splits, and because I honestly can't even figure out how to look at my splits on the watch, and I look at my route and stuff like that, and I enjoy that. And I guess I would enjoy that on a computer. That seems superfluous to me. I don't think there'd be any added value in that. I don't know. I'm just trying to think through, like, I think too, like, anything that integrates with Siri, where you can just speak to it, I really hope that Apple figures out like how to do the skills thing, similar to what Amazon's done.
Yeah,
I think that would open up, because then Amazon would just be like, yeah, okay, fine, we have an Amazon app now. It's or a skill that you just speak to Siri and we'll order whatever you want doing that. Yeah. Right, I could totally see. Hey Siri, ask. You're so good. I tried. Ask Amazon to buy baby wipes, something, right?
Right.
Boom. It would do it, and that would be super cool.
Well, once again, that would require a dedicated watch app.
I guess that's true. And maybe the watch is a lot more like how, I can't remember, we were talking about this later, how Facebook views like Messenger,
right?
Where it's like, no, you actually don't need a separate platform. You can do everything inside of this other app, and you can play games, you can ask questions, you've got bots, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
If you think about it, that's all that the Amazon skills are. They're just a bunch of bots that are verbal. But anyways.
I think that's the point.
And maybe that's the route that the watch should take, where it's like, you don't have apps, you've got, I don't know, whatever that watch version of that is, complications. Yeah. No, that's not right either. I don't know.
And honestly, one of the things that I find interesting about it is that there's been a lot of talk this week about Apple's going to be launching an Amazon Echo competitor. And one of the execs, I can't remember which one, was talking about how the biggest problem with the Amazon Echo, in his opinion, is that there are a lot of actions that it would be really great to have a screen. Something you can glance at, which
yeah, there's an app for that,
right? Right, and people have taken the implication.
But they want it glanceable, is that?
Yeah, and people have taken that to imply that Apple is going to have an Echo competitor, and it's going to have a screen attached to it.
Mistake.
What?
It's a mistake.
Well, maybe. I mean, probably, but. I don't know, man. Well,
maybe if it was a glanceable screen and not a touch screen.
That being said, Amazon,
like my computer monitor.
This week, Amazon has been leaking like a sieve with their glanceable Amazon Echo thing with a screen.
I've heard about that. Yeah,
Amazon's coming out with something like that. But what's interesting to me is that's effectively what the Apple Watch is. If you take away all of the, the health stuff. It's notifications and Siri with a screen, you know, like by and large that you walk around with. By and large, I think that's that is the direction that a lot of these companies are going, is this sort of,
I think that's totally okay for the record.
Yeah, me too. I think that's fine. I think it makes more sense, honestly, and it's the reason why Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, is pushing the future of bots so hard. And he, during their presentation this week, one of the things that he talked about was that, like, they don't really sell phones anymore.
yeah.
And but he said that, you know, don't expect our next phone to seem a lot like a phone. Which is a weird thing to call to describe a phone as, but the guy who's in charge of their HoloLens program, or who pioneered it, he went on the record this week saying the smartphone's already dead and people haven't realized it yet.
What?
I know. Well, but I do think that
you would think that.
I know. I agree.
Apple's just,
man.
Like, you know, you're so right, as they're fanning themselves with their $250 billion.
Except they had their first year-over-year decline in sales. I mean, you know, granted,
which was driven by a single country, by the way. It was actually up in every single country except for one. It just so happens the one that it was down was not, you know, it's ginormous.
Yeah.
Let's just be very clear. It may be dead in China, but it's doing just fine everywhere else in the world.
but the point is, and this is something that I've been talking about, is that I've said it before, I'll say it now, and I'll say it again, but it's the worst possible size for a device. It's that unique bad spot between really mobile and really useful. It's hit the sweet spot of being neither. It's too big to fit in people's pockets comfortably. It's too small to be able to do large productivity on stuff. I just
mine fits in my pocket comfortably.
That's what you say, but I swear our grandchildren are gonna laugh at us for having walked around with these glass screens in our pockets. Be like, that's crazy, I can't believe you.
Okay.
You old folks did that. And I think it's an anachronism, and it makes sense in the current
it's just
frame.
It's never a fair statement, because for where we're at today, it's perfect. It's the Goldilocks. And yes, eventually there will be some new material and technology that comes along that makes us go, dude, remember CRTs? Yeah, I know, but for where we're at today,
no, I don't think
it's perfect.
I think you understand, James, what I'm saying.
I think I do understand.
I just
have to enjoy it for the phase of culture and society and technology that we're in. And given the technology that we have today, I think it's the right size.
Look, I'm understanding nowadays when it comes to movies.
And I have no doubt that eventually something better will come along.
Well, his point is
even go, dude, remember the internet? We used to wait for pages to load.
I think his point is, and I tend to agree with this, is that next thing is already, a lot of people think companies aren't spending giant amounts of resources to make the next iteration of the smartphone that's going to take over the smartphone market. At this point, everybody Fair but enough. Apple is working on the next thing. And even Apple is, they're not inventing anything for the iPhone that doesn't cross pollinate with something else. Like,
Fair enough.
They, you know, if it doesn't also bridge, I hope that's what's going on in Apple. If it doesn't somehow bridge the gap to the future, obviously, you know.
Well, if you look at how they're trying to transform their sources of revenue, yeah, they're trying to go from hardware to software and services. So, you know, for them, they're trying to get that consistent revenue stream so that, yeah, they're not as dependent on iPhone or hardware sales, so they can keep jumping to the next thing and not necessarily have to worry about whether or not the entire world adopts it or not.
Right.
I think, I honestly get the sense like the phone is, that sounds really weird. It's like, it's Seinfeld in the sense that Seinfeld came along and it was timed perfectly where it was a good TV show to begin with, but it happened to be when everybody owned a TV, but everyone wasn't on the, you know what I mean?
There weren't,
like, they had TV, they had cable, they like, it was this perfect storm for like whatever was going to be the hit TV show at that time was going to be the biggest hit TV show of ever.
All time. Yeah.
and it just happened that it was a good show, and it made it even that much easier to root for it and to want to watch it. And you get the sense that from a technology standpoint, like the phone just hit that cycle just right, where like the internet was a thing, computers were like kind of on, you know, had done their thing, but yet whatever that next thing, technology that was going to be appropriate for a culture specific people wasn't quite there yet, or you know what I'm saying?
I think what you're trying to get at is Moore's Law had gotten stuff to the point where we were truly ready for two things: A, mobility, and disposable devices. Because mobility was going to be of high value to the high economic classes of the world, and disposable devices was going to be valuable to poorer countries. And the smartphone was able to straddle, and the operating systems of the smartphone were able to straddle that entire spectrum. And be like, you could buy a $100 smartphone and have a full featured internet mobile device running Android in China on a very low salary, or you could have these super powerful mobile pocket computers as a rich American and, or European or Chinese, I guess. but it's, you know, like you said, it straddled that moment, and it caught on and exploded on a global scale that the desktop couldn't dream of doing.
The internet had just, you know, 2007, right?
Right.
It had 2006. It had come out of the .com bust. There was this Web 2.0 was this thing. But websites had gotten more advanced, and APIs had been figured out. But it also wasn't so fast and efficient that it made sense just to have a web browser.
Right.
The idea of having a built-in app still made a ton of sense because things weren't quite connected. You know, I mean, you could imagine if your phone's download speeds were four times what it is today, yeah, load up a web page, whatever. You know, right, I don't care. But that's not the case. And so,
well, the desktop is the perfect example. Nobody downloads apps anymore.
And that was like, right? I'm trying to like rack my brain going, what apps do I download that I can compare to my watch and the answers or to my phone? But I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, you know, is.
I think what's important. I think importantly, and this is
so. There, did they say? I mean, I want to try to get back to this. So, did did Microsoft, whoever that dude was, did he say what he thinks?
Well, he thinks it's the HoloLens. That's why.
Oh. Okay. Well,
you know, heads up display.
I didn't know if he was going to the bot route or something like that. But
well, I think what his
voice
point
controlled.
Is, I think what his point is that yeah, well, and the Seinfeld actually works as a pretty good leaping off point, because it's like Seinfeld, like you said, there was this moment in time where sort of everything coalesced. People still all watched a single TV show at the same time of day. It was pre-TiVo. It was pre-cord cutters.
It was funny. Like, I've been talking about watching Cheers, and I was talking to this guy. And I'm like, man, it's awesome. I'm in season 5, and I'm just rolling through it. And he goes, huh, I remember I had to watch that 1 week at a time with the rest of the world.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, right, is it's that there was a – that leads to – mass adoption, that regular cycle of there were a couple of things that coalesced all together that allowed these shows, and there was a couple of shows, but then Seinfeld being the king of them, to become these giant shows, and you'll never see that again, because right. Whereas like at that time a big show was pulling in 20 million people a night. Nowadays, if a show pulls in 5 million people, it is, during the week, it is an enormous show and success. At the time, at its peak, America's Got Talent. That's a dumb one. What was the other singing contest? American Idol. There we go. American Idol was like the biggest of the biggest TV shows, and they were pulling like 15 million, which was peanuts compared to what Seinfeld was. But like that at the time, no TV show could pull that many people. Whereas Seinfeld, no, it was a piece of cake. And MASH was a similar one, and it's ability to pull enormous numbers. And I think what you're trying to explain and how this relates to Apple and the future is that, and this goes back to Andreessen's article that we talked about at the end of last year, is that everything has a computer in it now. And
right.
Not everybody's the next thing, the thing that replaces the iPhone, isn't one thing. There's going to be a whole suite of things that'll all right. kind of, you'll find the sort of niche of stuff that fits you and what you need.
Some people want their notifications on their wrist. Some people want them as heads-up displays. Some people will still want them on their phone. Some people will want them in their car. Some people will get them in 2 or 3 of the 15 options they have.
Some people will be like, no, sign me up for the global laser system that beams it into my eyeballs every time I walk through a store.
Man.
It'll be like a...
Do I get a discount? If I get a discount, I want
exactly.
in.
Exactly. Sign me up. It'll be just like a Minority Report. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's the future we're going. But, you know, in the interim, James, Microsoft is still trying to make the computer, the laptop work.
You mean last generation's computing platform?
Yeah, so... Microsoft talked this week a bit. They had two new products.
They did.
They launched a Windows 10 S, which nobody's really sure what it is. And, well, I mean, I know exactly what it is. Their messaging is quite confusing. And they also launched a new Microsoft Surface laptop that they're trying to tell you that it's a MacBook. It's not a MacBook. It's a Chromebook. But
well, I like that they compare it to the MacBook Air specifically,
right?
Which in is all like, of their comparisons, and you go, really?
Yeah, because the MacBook Air is like
that's not cherry picked. That's their oldest year, one.
Yeah, that's their oldest laptop that they have on their fleet. And granted, it's still a $1,100 computer that Apple sells along the rest of them.
They sell it,
but yep. Yeah, it's quite archaic compared to even the MacBook, but. You know, there's.
Having said all that, looks sweet. It does. If I was buying a Windows device, this would be in my top three.
Yeah. What are your top?
Surface Book being number one.
Oh man. You know what would be my top? I would still make my own PC with the biggest NVIDIA.
No, laptops. Come on. Wait. Okay. So you're saying you wouldn't even get a laptop? No. Just go desktop.
I want the biggest, meanest looking graphics card I can buy at this point in my life. which would be a pretty
not me, dude. Mobility.
It would be a pretty big, mean-looking graphics card.
I could, thankfully, I can be. I'd throw some money at it. And be like, give me some polygons, NVIDIA.
I'd want somehow a fairly decent-sized laptop that I can run a 30-inch monitor off of.
Yeah.
In 4K.
I feel that. There was a monitor that
apparently not much else, if that's what I'm going for.
You're right. So there's a monitor that somebody announced last week that I really wanted, but it was like a 30-inch or 35-inch. It was an enormous 4K monitor with
35 inches.
But it had 4 HDMI inputs into it. So you could have two 4K sources and have a full 4K. Or you could split it into 4 1080 screens.
Huh.
And this is the kicker. It has a mouse server built into it. So you would plug your mouse and keyboard into it. Yeah, and you could just scroll across. So what the coolest part about that is that means that you could have a Mac and a Windows computer plugged into it and just mouse across. Yeah, it was pretty it's pretty neat. I wanted one.
Sounds awesome.
I know. They're expensive though, man. They're expensive.
Yeah. Sounds expensive. And that's like that monitor is made for stock traders.
Yeah, pretty much. Engineers can we get into those
traffic control towers. I don't know.
My battle station's got a bit of that going on right now. I feel it. but the so Windows 10S is their latest version of Windows. And nobody's exactly sure what it's supposed to be because they kind of pitched it as two things. But basically, you know, I'll do the rundown of its limitations / offerings. So number one, it only runs Windows Store's apps. So instead of being able to download apps and sideload them onto your computer, is the term usually is. So like, let's say you wanted to run Adobe, which you can't buy through the App Store, you can't run it. You'd have to get it.
Actually, that one you can, but I know where you're going with for an example.
Chrome is a great example of an application that you can't download through the Microsoft App Store. You have to download it from the internet and from browser, and so you can't run Chrome on it. We'll get back to why that. The reason why that's important is because this thing's all about security and performance. One of the biggest advantage that closed ecosystems have, whether it's the Xbox, a PlayStation, the iPhone, is when you have these closed ecosystems where you need a license and permission from the owner of the device or the manufacturer of the device to get your applications on them, they tend to be way more secure and they can optimize for performance. So the argument being here is that, if you could only download through the Microsoft Store, Microsoft can make sure that there aren't any viruses and that they're going to perform well on the device. They also, default browser and search settings are locked to Microsoft. So you got to use their Edge browser, which by all accounts is a pretty awesome browser. I would be bummed by that because so many of my settings in Chrome are attached to my account and I wouldn't be able to use those things, which would be annoying. But the browser itself is pretty good. The frustrating part about that is it's locked to Bing, which is still not Google search. They do say that you are allowed, of course, to go to google.com and search, but you know, I don't want to do that every time, Microsoft. I want to give me the default. But anyways, that's where they're at. Number one, and it looks and works just like Windows 10. It is Windows 10 more or less, other than a few of these kind of stripped down features, but it would, it looks and feels just like it. It can be upgraded to Windows 10 Pro for a mere $50, $49.
Home or Pro, yeah.
Exactly. Home or Pro.
Which I would instantly do.
Right. You can't go back, though. And so some people are comparing this to the Windows RT
that they came out with during Windows 8, which was kind of a disaster. People didn't really understand it. It shares a lot of the similarities in that it's Windows RT could only use apps from the App Store. You couldn't.
And they were only full, but yeah, they were like full screen apps.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there was significant limitations that were put on it.
Microsoft's like, heck no, though. This isn't that. It feels a bit like that. they're pitching it as the reason for this is that it's a lot to do with education. So the S stands for schools, maybe.
School, security, simple. Yeah.
Speed. And, you know, it's because one of the things that they wanted, there were other devices that were announced with this that weren't built by Microsoft. Like there's an HP device that costs like $199, I think, the device. Some very cheap devices. The point being that they want to get access into schools. They want it to be a device that can go in there. And so the fact that it can only download Windows stores, it's got an emphasis on security and performance, would make it highly valuable to schools who just want to give kids access to a computer for specific applications and school-related stuff. Allow the kids to break it open. It allows them to buy cheaper computers. So there's a lot of advantages there. The weird part about it is that they're putting it on their $1,000 computer that they announced.
And, I did wonder about that.
What it clearly is this is Google looking at the – not Google. This is Microsoft looking at Google's Chromebooks and saying there's something there. Google is making progress with that. And we don't want them to erode at the lowest end and then move into the middle space where Microsoft makes most of its money with the Chromebook. Yeah. So they've got a alternative offering. And the point of making these, I really do believe that the point of their new laptop, which is called, what's it called? I don't remember. The Surface laptop. It's
the Surface, yeah.
The entire point of it is to basically do what Google did with the Pixel laptop, where the Pixel laptop was $1,000 high end, like magnesium cast laptop. It looked really nice. It had a really high resolution screen, but ran Chrome. And the argument that they were making was, look, Chrome can perform on high end computers, and it's this really nice operating system. It's full featured. Now they discontinued the Pixel Chromebook because nobody bought it. but making the argument that it could run on high-end software did help kind of establish the Chromebook as a legitimate product. And especially as Google continues to have success in the very low-end devices, Microsoft is, I think, getting a little bit worried. And so they just start ripping off Google strategy, like full sale. And even to the end of comparing this thing to the MacBooks, which is what Google did when they came out with the Pixel Chromebook, was compare it to Apple, make people think, try to associate this device with an Apple-like device, target schools, because that's who buys the most Chromebooks, and established this version of Windows as this cheap, stable, easy to access version of Windows. And don't let Google with the Chromebooks erode you on the low end. I think the Surface laptop, their intention is if you buy it, that you'd upgrade it to Windows Pro or Windows Home immediately. They don't actually expect people to keep the XS. The reason why they put it on there, A, it allows them to knock the price back $50, which helps a lot. But B, they're trying to show that, no, this is a real operating system. It's full-featured, and it's worth it. I don't know. It's an interesting strategy. I hope that this is part of a bigger strategy, and that Windows 10S is going to evolve into something else, because if all it is just a slimmed down version of Windows 10 and always kind of lags, that's frustrating. But I hope this is part of a bigger strategy to evolve Windows 10S and Windows 10 Pro into the same thing, more or less. Or at least Windows 10 Home and Windows 10S into the same thing. I think they want a closed ecosystem, and I think they can achieve that and get a lot of different perks. Because they look at the iPhone and they go, that's part of what made it so successful, is it's really easy. It's upgradable. They have a consistent ecosystem because everybody upgrades it all the time. And a lot of what Microsoft, what Satya Nadella's Microsoft has been doing, has been trying to, how do you turn the iPhone strategy into a laptop desktop strategy? And this feels like a step trying to make progress down that road of build a closed ecosystem that is more efficient, is cheaper, is more secure, and sell it on those things as you try to evolve it and expand it. Microsoft's in a weird spot because they always will have to have the pro version, which will be totally open for anybody to load anything onto it. Just because it's such a powerful development platform. But I think that they'd really like to have two classes of Windows in the end. One, which is the consumption first device, that is like the iPad and iOS in general, and then have the productivity, desktop or operating system, which would be the Windows 10 Pro. It's fascinating watching Microsoft try to like evolve into Apple.
Hey, it's working. I applaud the efforts.
Yeah, no, I like it. I think it's working pretty well. But
so you're gonna go out and get one? Is that your?
Yeah, heck no, man. Does it have the biggest, the meanest looking graphics card that I can afford?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. No.
I was reading an article, and the guy he did an interesting like mental exercise. He was like, which of these two would you prefer? Would you prefer Windows 10, we'll say the pro version, running on an Apple device, or would you prefer macOS running on a Windows device?
Oh, jeez. Oh, man.
Huh. I know, it's forcing you to... Because it's interesting, because it's not just about which hardware do you like better. I mean, because that's a joke of a question for just like Android stuff, because you're like, would you prefer Android on Samsung or on LG, right? You know?
I think, honestly, I'm going with my gut here a little bit. I haven't really thought through it. But I think if I had to choose, I'd go with Windows on Mac hardware. No.
Really?
Yeah. No, that's the one. No. I don't know.
Windows
on I don't know. Because like, you know what? No, maybe I'd go the other way. Maybe I would go the other way. Maybe I'd go with Apple. Maybe I'd go with okay, are we just talking desktops?
Sure.
Because part of what Apple
and pretend that it all runs the same, right? Compatibility has been solved.
Well, that's part of the issue, right? Is that it's. I'm assuming if I get Windows, if I get OS X or Mac OS rather on open hardware, right? So Windows hardware, HP was building my hardware. I could get an NVIDIA's graphics card and stuff. You would inherently have to accept the inefficiencies that come along with having to support that many devices. The stability of I'm overthinking it.
Yeah, just quit overthinking it.
No,
it's Mac OS as it works today, but running on, let's say, the Surface laptop versus
why would you do that?
Windows 10 S working on a MacBook.
But why would you do that?
Why would you? It's just trying to crystallize. Do you? What attracts you to Apple or Microsoft? Is it software or the hardware?
See, okay. Well, you know what? You know, part of my struggle is right now with answering this question is that it's like I'm kind of irritated with Apple right now. I'll be totally honest. I'm looking over the wall because to me it's just the operating
system. Mine's Mac OS on a Windows machine.
To me, it's like it's entirely the operating system. It's which operating system do I want? And right now, I kind of like everything I have is Apple. Everything is Mac OS centric, but I kind of want a Microsoft computer. And so I'm like, you know,
I have one. It's not all it's cracked up to be.
A MacBook running Windows would be pretty nice, man. You get that big old touchpad.
You could do it with the boot camp.
Yeah, I could do it with a boot camp. If I wanted to pay just an enormous amount of money for the software and the hardware. None of this has the biggest, meanest looking NVIDIA graphics card, though. That's my biggest dilemma. That's my real hang up, James.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah, no, it's not the hardware. I mean, the hardware is a perk.
I want Windows 10 on an awesome laptop, and I want Mac OS on an awesome laptop. I just want both.
Me too.
I use both for personal stuff. So
that's the biggest problem. I don't actually think I get away with just one. I don't, because I've got my work desktop that when I need to do Windows stuff, I do Windows stuff on it. But I want a personal one so I can do more personal stuff on it. Get really crazy.
That is super crazy.
It's awesome. Damn, I'm excited. I gotta go to the Windows store and check out this new computer. Oh, excuse me. Test it out.
Yeah, the fabric covered keyboard sounds interesting.
Sounds horrible to me.
I know there's questions of durability, but I like the idea of it.
Durability and cleanliness. Oh gosh.
Nah. Let's pour some water over it. Water.
Yes. Maybe with a little bit of salt in it, make sure it gets really conductive.
Yeah, I'm not a free sweater, so I wouldn't be worried about it. And I'm not overly dirty. Though I don't know. I have to clean my keyboards.
No, I mean,
regularly, but every once in a while.
My problem is that it's like over the course of a year or two, I'm not particularly oily, thankfully, but over the course of a year or two, it. Yeah, well, good points.
Man, you're a hoarder. Come on, move on.
I know. Upgrade, man. Do better.
Mine, it just starts to slow down. You're out. No, that's not true. I wish that was true.
I know.
I'm saying on my however old this.
You're hilarious because your devices are still like twice as old as mine.
No, it's like 7 years old. It's ridiculous. 6 years old. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Doesn't it not matter, James? It feels like it matters somehow.
It feels like it matters pretty regularly to me too. I just replaced my modem this weekend as well because
I can tell.
As from last week, you can remember I got cut off partway through the podcast. And so I replaced it. And they tried to tell me like, oh, yeah, your modem is just old. I was like, it's like 3 years old. Like, oh, my gosh, you're still using that? Yes. I feel like that's not very old. It's like, you need to upgrade immediately. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess. So we'll see. I didn't work a lot. Since I wasn't working last week, I kind of took all week to do it, but we'll see. Hopefully that solves my problem. Yeah, technology is weird, man. It's like phones, like, 2 years max. Apparently modems, 3 years. Computers can still be up there.
Yeah, computers can get old. Cars.
How long should I hold on to my watch for? What's the rules?
You know, honestly,
that?
I think.
Is that 6 months?
Mine is not going to make it past 2 years, I don't think.
You're getting whatever Series 3
is.
Yeah,
yeah. It's noticeable that it's well, you're just. I can easily say, okay, Siri. I'll get it. What are you doing? It just regularly misses it.
And I'm like, I could just tell that other people's other, like the newer Apple Watches work better than mine. I'm like, oh, and I feel like with a new operating system, the next operating system, it's going to get worse. So it's just time, James. It's time.
Doing the full thermostats last about 9 months, so that's nice.
Yeah, now we know what to expect there. So it was kind of a cool announcement this week.
Let's switch to science.
In the areas of biotechnology. Are you aware of the CRISPR?
You know, I am actually. I listened to another podcast that fully explained it, and it's crazy amazing.
Podcasts?
I know. Jeez. Radiolab. They had an entire segment on it. It was really good, actually.
I remember having a conversation with a buddy of mine from high school, like at the end of high school, and he was talking about the idea of how he was like, you know what's crazy is like we're going to be able to do gene therapy one day. So this was 2004. This was a long time ago. He's like, they're working on doing gene therapy, but they basically are going to use viruses to do what viruses do, but with like the DNA that we want to do it with. Because how HIV works, the HIV, is the virus goes into your T cells, which are things they're specifically supposed to protect against things like the HIV virus. It gets into them and then it modifies the DNA so that they become HIV factories. And it's that part that makes HIV simultaneously so powerful and in its deadly, but also makes it such a, like, it just tantalized scientists with the power of what you could do with that. Like, you can edit individual cells in the entire body. That's a crazy idea. And so CRISPR is all about doing that, going in and modifying DNA. And so basically what they did in this experiment was they had a couple of different rats, some with human cells in them, some without human cells in them, some of that edited DNA. They gave them all HIV, and the HIV virus did exactly what it, I guess you can just call it the HIV virus, did exactly what it's supposed to do, which it goes and modifies the T cells of them and started producing more HIV. AIDS being the, once the HIV goes far enough down the road of defeating your immune system, then something else can, you've got AIDS. And I'm not positive.
Okay.
I'm HIV positive. So what they were able to do is retroviral drugs can make the HIV go dormant, but that DNA still exists in your T cells. And so if you get off the retrovirals, those little cell factories can pick up, producing more HIV, and you're in a world of trouble. And it's back. So actually curing it requires going in and modifying the DNA, and that's exactly what they did. A team of scientists have snipped away HIV DNA from the genomes of living mice using CRISPR system, and the rodents lived to kind of tell the tale. It's still much too early to call the method a possible cure, but the fact that it worked on a living animal opens up a lot of possibilities. Will it work on other diseases like cancer? Maybe, but that's something scientists have to look into. Research is headed by goes on. The current antiretroviral therapy for HIV is very successful in suppressing replication of the virus, but that does not eliminate the copies of the virus that have been integrated into the gene. So anytime the patient doesn't take the medication, the virus can rebound, which is kind of interesting because it's like we've talked about this before over the years, but the idea that HIV is more or less cured, but it requires constant medication in order to live a normal life. But and they've had some success with other treatments like bone marrow replacement, but this one might be a pretty big actual solution that can be applied to many people. One of the things that's interesting to me.
So I went and I found that Radiolab episode, and we're going to link to it in the show notes. It's crazy fascinating. And I think they just do a great job of covering what it is, where it's been, and kind of where it's headed. And it's intense.
Yeah.
Because they figured out how to make CRISPR self-replicate over time, which is super crazy. So it's this idea of like, if you wanted to get rid of something dumb, redheads, like you could do it in theory, because it would constantly go in and kill that gene or replace it with whatever else you want it to be. And it's this weird thought that they've had of like, because they can go in and like change it at the embryo DNA level. And they're like, we can not only make a change in you, like in your child, but in your entire, that child's entire offspring.
Right.
We can fundamentally change a species. And you're like, whoa. So it's intense.
And the other thing
I recommend listen to that episode. It's good.
I would say the other important thing is that they can also do gene therapy to change it. So it's not just your child, which will permanently change it for all of their offspring, but they can go in and modify the DNA in all of the hair follicles on your head. And
right.
So you're not a redhead anymore. So one of the big deals, so the flip side of this and why they talk about curing cancer is because it's like, well, cancer is caused by a genetic mutation introduced somehow or another that causes the cells to replicate continuously and ceaselessly, and they basically the things that limit the cells from doing that turn off. And the most dangerous type of cancer that's usually a death sentence is a metastasized cancer, right? Because it, instead of it being in one location where we can treat this one blob of cells with radiation and chemotherapy, no, it's all over your body. It's spreading, and the rate at which it grows goes way up. Well, CRISPR could theoretically fight that, something like that, because it can go in and re-edit all of the DNA in every single cell, deleting just that one part that's causing a problem. And so, you know, we're a long ways from that, but not that long.
Yeah, it's scary. Not that long.
And the other part of this, and this is the part that gets me, is that it's like, we're gonna definitely get to a point sometime in in the future of humanity where this is like a super powerful bioweapon, but it's but it's also its own defensive bioweapon, where it's like, if CRISPR goes out and edits into everybody a horrible disease, like, I don't know, HIV, and you make it so that like CRISPR is airborne and everybody can, like, you know, you aerosol it and then everybody gets it. Well, you've also got like the same thing, which this is what it brings me to. I was talking about this with some friends this weekend. They did the 23andMe and they got some surprising results about their heritage, that they were under the impression that they were from one particular country, and it turns out not at all.
They're not.
Are
they related to us or random other friends?
You know them, but they're from high school.
Not family.
Yeah.
Got it.
I actually had a fraternity brother who is Persian, and we'd known he was Persian. On his honeymoon, he and his wife decided to go to what's that country at the very end of
Persia?
not Persia, but the country at the end of Europe.
Where you're headed with
not
this.
Spain.
The country at the
Portugal decided to go to Portugal for their honeymoon, and while they were there, his wife pointed out how weird it was how close he looked to all the Portuguese, and so he talked to his dad. He was like, "Do we have any Portuguese in our history?" And his dad was like, "Oh yeah, no, you're like mostly Portuguese." What? He's like, "Oh yeah, like yeah." Hey, you only got a little bit of Persian in you. He's like, why did you tell me I was Persian? And he's like, I don't know. This was the most interesting part.
It's good for college apps.
Exactly. But he,
that's funny.
But anyways, these other friends, they had a not dissimilar experience, except it was revealed through 23andMe. And we were kind of talking about it. And I've been meaning to look into doing this, but I want to get my DNA sequenced. And 23andMe looks for like alleles and looks for, they're kind of looking at a higher level of patterns and stuff. They don't do a full sequencing of your DNA because it's really expensive and time consuming. It doesn't necessarily tell you any more information, but
makes sense.
They're starting to talk about how they actually want more people to get their DNA sequenced because it can act as a baseline. And the idea that, you know, if you get cancer and we're in our 30s.
They know what you were pre-cancer.
Right. Hmm. And in 50 years, we get cancer. They can go back and say, okay, what was their young DNA like? Can we go in with something with the future of CRISPR and re-edit in your corrected DNA?
I'm in. Let's do this. Like, how expensive are we talking?
It's like $1.5 grand was the what I've heard. I'd have to look into it. One of the things that I really want is I want it to be an organization that you pay them to sequence your DNA and then they don't hold on to it. I'd really like it to be I hold on to it. It's my personal information. I don't necessarily want I don't want my fully sequenced DNA being held in a database.
I'd be cool if they do research on my DNA. If they ever discover something, like, I'm first in line.
That's a good point.
I mean, I want my own copy that I hold on to somehow, however that works. Yeah. But, you know, use it. Anonymize it, I guess.
I guess, I know that's one of the big concerns with 23andMe is they're like, they've got a copy of your DNA. And that's theirs now. And another, I don't know. It's interesting. But I think it's worth looking into because this stuff is only getting more powerful.
Is it your personal information? I feel like your DNA is your personal. But you didn't actually generate the information. They generated the information based on
the
personal thing that you sent them.
And when you signed the do this for me, that's my point. Well, that's my point. From a legal perspective, it's no longer your personal information. You've contractually given it to them and they can do whatever they want with it. It'd be like writing a story and giving it to a publisher who now owns the story because you've contractually given it to them. As an author, you shouldn't do that. You should still be able to, like, you should hold on to the patent of your own DNA. But at this point, you just give people your DNA and you have no protections beyond that. Huh. What happens if it turns out that, like, your DNA holds the cure to cancer? They can just take that. They don't have to pay you for it or anything. That seems unlikely. But, you know, it doesn't seem like the wisest thing to do to just finally give it to somebody and be like, I don't even care what you're going to do with it. Just have fun. Be good with this stuff, please. So this is a little less, this is more artsy and less sciencey. Avigant, is the name of the company. But they have a light field tech demo. We've talked about these light field stuffs before, where they're these giant arrays of Oh my gosh. That's really funny. This is a different article than I thought it was. This is actually a better article than I forgot this one. So totally, this is, so we've talked about this before. What's that one company that I think is a joke? They're ridiculous. Magic Leap? No.
Magic Leap, yeah.
Is that them? Or is that the hand guys? Yeah. Leap Motion is the hand guys.
Leap Motion? Leap
Magic,
something's in
Magic
there.
Leap is the company. But they're that ridiculous startup that has raised like well over $1 billion. They're not evaluated $1 billion.
Nothing to show for it.
Raised over $1 billion. And Beyonce was like totally unimpressed by it. But
some, I can't remember which the NBA guy was. He was super impressed by it. He was like, oh, it's so awesome. It's so cool. There's this company, Avigant. You know them from their Glyph projectors. They're those, like, they look like a head. They look like a headset where they, where I got the earmuffs, or they look like headphones. I got the earmuffs, but it like rotates down on your face and it projects a movie theater size picture into your head. They came onto the market a couple of years ago, and the entire idea of it was this personal entertainment center that you would be able to go into, like sit on a plane, you plug in your HDMI into it, and it works like a projector. And it's always gotten really rave reviews about the quality of the image. One of the things they talk about is how, like, we got like laser things that we project into your eyeballs, and it allows them to make these really high resolution images and this really great experience. But it had no like context for where your head was looking, so it was just a monitor that you could use on trains or on airplanes and stuff. So it had limited appeal outside of a very particular, you know, rich globetrotters that wanted that sort of an experience.
Yeah,
but it turns out they've done well enough that it's turned into a pretty full featured R&D thing. And what they've decided is to demo a light field tech. Light field technology is what Magic Leap has been talking about doing. And so these guys have a mixed reality headset that they've set up. And it's like, it's point for point everything that Magic Leap talks about. They've got the multiple field, like focus fields. So one of the problems with
I've been learning enough about patents that this is going to be a fun one to watch.
Oh yeah, there's
Magic Leap hasn't actually done anything yet.
Yes. So one of the cool things that one of the dilemmas with like the HoloLens and VR is that it has a single field of view. So things that are single depth of field. So they have to, if something is in the background, they have to programmatically blur it. And if you look at it, it looks blurry, even if you focus on it, because they've got one field of one depth of field where the screen is. The light field tech, and why everybody thinks it's very neat, is because it has multiple fields of view. And what that means is like you can literally have something in the background that you look at and focus on, and all of a sudden it becomes clear and crisp, and everything in the foreground goes blurry, like it were a real object in real space, which is huge for making these digital things very immersive in real time. They are working with the HoloLens, the Windows operating system, as opposed to Magic Leap, who's like, we're developing our own operating system because we're so advanced and cool, which I think is a ridiculous idea. That's so dumb. Like, build the hardware, leverage what's out there already, and that's what these guys are doing. I don't know. I really like this. I'm pretty excited about it. I've always thought the Glyph thing was dumb because I didn't have any use for it, but it looked pretty neat. It was like high quality hardware. And now they're coming out with something that they're like, look, this is what we're good at. We've worked out the kinks in this technology. We're doing motion tracking. And so it works like the HoloLens, where it's this big old thing that you put on your face, covers up your eyes. The other big thing that they're talking about, and this is, I don't know how they're achieving this, but they're saying that the field of view is actually really big, so that one of the biggest complaints with the HoloLens is that your peripheral vision, if things get outside of your, like, the peripheral vision on it is not very big. Yeah. Whereas somehow they've managed to get the peripheral vision of this stuff quite high. So it's very immersive. It's just like, this feels like a big deal. A bigger deal than Magic Leap, who talks like they're the biggest deal that's ever happened. But these guys have an actual demo and an actual company. They manufacture a product at scale, which is a huge deal, in my opinion.
It gives you a lot of experience.
Exactly. And as opposed to having to tool up completely from the ground up for this radically new product with a new software and everything. Yeah, it's still incredibly promising. Tang even showed me a mock-up of what the final Avegant light-fueled headset might look like, and its slim, lightweight affair that's significantly more stylish than the HoloLens looks like right now. Magic Leap is perhaps the closest to what Avegant is proposing, but hardly anyone has seen it in action and doesn't look like it'll be a reality anytime soon. Avegant doesn't have their mind share of the bigger companies mentioned here, but at least they attempt to push AR forward. Even if the company doesn't eventually make it to the finish line, it could well have offered a glimpse of into what affordable, consumer-friendly AR will actually look like. And I'm sitting here saying...
And they're going to get bought by Microsoft.
Well,
bigger is what's going to happen.
They could get bought, which would be huge, but it's like, I don't know. Like, nobody else seems to be working on this particular type of viewing thing. So... there's space for them, man. They could make something happen, and if they integrate friendly, you know, if they leverage the softwares out there as hard as they can and do what they do well, which is, you know, high resolution screens with this cool light field effect, they could really definitely be a leader in the field. It's cool. It's exciting. Way more exciting than Magic Leap. Your product is dumb. You're a dumb company. That's my opinion.
That's how you really feel about it.
I know.
That's funny. Man, mine sounds really dumb relative to this. So Square is rolling out a debit card. A prepaid one, by the way.
A prepaid debit. Isn't that what all debit cards are? I don't understand.
Yeah, sure. I guess, technically. Now that you say it like that.
Yeah. It's even less cool. Jeez.
Well, I guess the idea is, yeah, but they're not quite a bank.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
It's this idea of whatever, yeah, you have funds in your Square account.
Okay.
I guess, and then you can spend using those funds.
That's kind of neat.
Debit card. Man, I don't know. Now you've said that, I'm just like, huh.
It's just, basically,
they rethink this article. They don't know what they're talking
basically
about.
Basically, it's an advertisement for Square. They're talking about they got a new physical card so you can extend the product outside of just tapping. They're expanding their portfolio.
Well, it turns out that people really like using their cards.
Yeah.
As much as we talk about using, like... Apple Pay or whatever.
You know, I hate to admit this.
Thing is on your watch.
I hate to admit this, but I've gotten into the habit of just pulling my card out and sticking it into the machine right away. Because I've come to realize that once the person behind the counter hits transaction finished, you know, it'll like process the transaction. It'll start immediately running my card, and I don't even look if it has Apple Pay anymore. Like, because I don't have to think about it as much. And then it, like, yells at me when it's time to pull the card out. And it actually is, like, ever so slightly easier. I'm like, I was just thinking about that today. Just being like, this is bad news for Apple. It's actually, as much as everybody hated it when it first came out because it was so slow, it's kind of convenient. Yeah. I don't know. I think the biggest deal here is that what's his name? Jack Dorsey is doing pretty well. Both of his companies had a pretty good quarter. Both Square and Twitter.
Yeah, that's true.
Twitter is the more surprising one of the two, frankly. but yeah, I don't know. It's a
Well, I think it's a cool card, and I'm on the hunt for a new bank, so...
Oh, yeah.
Definitely caught my attention. But it's just this idea, too, that I Square's not going away. They're getting into the real world, and I would not be surprised if they figure out how to be a bank but not a bank and kind of straddle that middle ground. That could be very cool.
Yeah, that would be huge for them. I like the company. I'm glad to see them... making inroads like that. I like it. Did you get your Google account hacked this week, James?
No. Like, did you?
1% of people did. No, I didn't, thankfully. But it was pretty interesting. There was a you might have been 1% of people got hit by this. Basically, what happened was you'd get an email from somebody saying they shared a Google Doc with you with a link. You click on the link. It asks you to sign in your credentials. And then it would immediately resend that email to everybody on our list. So the thing started to
spread. Same day that I read about that, I shared a Google Doc link with somebody.
Oh, nice.
I wonder if they'll open it.
And there were a couple of little telltale signs, but it was pretty well hidden because they had done things like the link, the URL for the link. I normally, if I get something that looks weird, I'll inspect the URL, and the thing that they were hosting it on Google services. So you'd scroll over it and there'd be a bunch of Google, like it was a google.com account or link. So they did some very clever things using Google's own weapon tools against them. Basically what they did was they used your authentication, which is a type of, it's kind of like cookies, but more advanced. They use that access to access your email and then email this link further. But what was crazy about it was the link basically was like, it was a Google style app that you were downloading when you clicked on it, hosted from Google. So you'd click on it, it looked like a Google link, it was talking about a Google Doc, and then it would bring you to an author, a sign-in page. And it looked exactly like a Google sign-in page because it was a Google sign-in page. They literally were using the authentication that Google uses. So you wouldn't even notice that you weren't just signing in. There was nothing on that site that would suggest anything was going wrong. But once you signed in, you had now given – they now had a copy of your OAuth token, and they could use that to do things from your account, which everyone was kind of like, well, this is not good. And Google figured out what was going on pretty quickly, and they said they were able to stop it before it got to about after – it was only about 1% of their users that were affected by it, which is well over a million people. And as far as they can tell, it wasn't malicious code. It was basically just trying to see if they could, whoever created it was trying to see if they could spread like wildfire, and get it out there from what people can tell. That was the extent of it, was just a leapfrogging going on. But it's interesting. It's scary in that it's like Google and Facebook to some extent, you know, they're trying to create these secure platforms and stuff, but they also want them to be open source and accessible. And at this point, there's a bit of social engineering going on with the actual engineering, and you can use those sorts of platforms against us is what it's turning out. And it's one of those things where, there are going to be more attacks like this in the future. This is going to become a more common thing because it's proving that people who are even, you know, people are starting to get more savvy. They're not clicking on every link that gets emailed to them anymore. If it looks weird, the people in my office who are less tech savvy, if it looks weird, they'll now come to me and say, "Hey, this looks weird. Is this weird?" And I'll be like, "Yeah, don't click on that." The less tech savvy are starting to get more savvy. So the hackers are starting to up their savvy game.
Evolve.
And now it's like it's not just good enough to see. You can't just look at the link and see, well, is this a Google account? No, you got to understand that Google can host malicious code without even knowing it because you're just using the Google Cloud platform. It'd be like it coming from the Amazon Web Services. You know, you'd look at it and see, oh, it just says Amazon. No big deal. I trust Amazon, not realizing that, no, malicious stuff can be hosted on these servers now. We're just going to have to learn. Go forward.
Oh, I love and hate the internet sometimes. It allows you to do so much, including malicious things. Oh, crazy. Well, I just want to finish it up with a really quick update that the Code Conference is coming up. And one person who we will not be here talking about, we will not hear interviewed, I guess, is Uber CEO Travis.
He's out.
Pretty funny, like Kara Swisher and Walt Mossberg both wrote it. You could tell they're both a little ticked. Here's how the here's their intro. Uber CEO Travis Kalanick is not the first exec to deal with sexual harassment and sexism issues, and he's not the first to be accused of stealing technology. He's also not the first to anger customers through cloddish statements, and he's not the first to face significant doubts about his ability to manage a fast-growing startup. But he is the very first speaker in the 15 years we've been putting on our tech and media events to cancel his interview due to the many embarrassing issues at his company.
Ah.
Oh, poor dude.
That's pretty rough.
Yeah,
don't be such a scumbag.
Yeah,
easy enough.
Yeah. Yeah, they were not super happy about him, and the worst part was they were like, for the record, there were actually two other people in the past who did not attend after committing to do so. But he's like, but in both cases, they were due to sudden and serious family illness. And they're like, so we kind of give a pass. And for both of them, they were like, they sent their number two in their place.
Mm.
And whereas this one, he's like, they can't get anybody to show up. Like Ariana Huffington, who's on their board, will be one of the people. But not actually anybody who's in the day-to-day of the company is committing to showing up. They're just like, oh, man. That's bad news, man.
That is terrible news.
They're in a death spiral. I don't know how they come out of this.
Oh, yeah. Just fire your CEO, man.
Right?
I don't think the company's in a death spiral, but I think Travis Kalanick. You know what? Why am I trying to learn how to say his last name at this point?
Travis.
I'm not going to have to know it for long. I think Travis is like he's in a personal death spiral, but.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Is what it is.
Definitely. All right. That's your tech news for the week. Pretty incredible. So check out the show notes. Let me do the actual ending here. Thank you for joining us and listening to episode, 293. Oh my gosh, we only got 7 more weeks. Crazy. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Don't forget, you can check out all the show notes with all the links at furloughbros.com. And yes, we are going to actively cross promote another episode where you can listen to Radiolab talk about CRISPR. It's super fascinating and we didn't give it nearly enough justice. If you want to learn about it, furloughbros.com/293. You look for it. It's going to be in the middle there. And then just click through to listen to the episode. Totally worth it. If for whatever reason you don't want to go to the website and you just kind of want these excellent morsels sent to you, you can sign up on that same page to get the email sent to you. We just do once a week, super easy, sends you all the links along with the actual podcast episode, and you can get all the information right there in your inbox. And then finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. So if you would also like to contribute, we have 4 different levels. We've got fanboys, nerds, junkies, and mavens, and they each have their own levels of rewards. So again, you can check out furloughbros.com to find out all of that and how you too can become a patron. And I'm going to stall for half a second while I switch over my audio. Sweet. With that, I am James Furlough and my guardian of a brother is Matthew Furlough. And so we will talk next time.
Thank you.